This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire for Wednesday, January 19th. And we got a good interview today. I think you guys will like it. During the Rams-Cardinals game on Monday Night Football, at the very end, I see this guy start tweeting Cliff Kingsbury's a fraud. I click on it, and it's like a reporter from USA Today. I was like, dang, it's aggressive, and I don't necessarily agree with it. So we had a little back and forth. I said, Rob G, do you know this guy? Can we get Mike Jones up in here? I said, yeah. And we got him, and we talked on Tuesday. Listen, there was some back and forth. We disagree on some stuff, but civil minds can have realistic disagreements. And a real good conversation followed. I think you guys are really going to like it. But before we get to Mike Jones and the NFL, two things. I'll start with Jimmy Garoppolo. Yes, a lot of San Francisco people are angry about my tweet from Tuesday about Jimmy G and the injury. And I don't know. A bunch of people beating down my DMs. Hey, can you come on my radio show? Can you? I'm like, guys, I have my own podcast. I'm not. I don't need to go on your show. And there's really no win for me there. What do I need that for? Bottom line, you know, you guys know I've been in the industry for a while. I'm during coaching season regularly hitting up people that are in the know. And someone while talking about coaches said, what do you think about Jimmy G? And I was like, well, what do you mean? He was bad in the second half. I know that, but he got the win. I think they could beat the Packers. He's like, Jimmy G might not even play. I was like, oh. He's like, yeah, the shoulder, the hand, it's not good. So instantly I texted somebody in the Bay Area I know. And they were like, I think he's going to be fine, right? I haven't heard anything. And of course, hours later, Shanahan addresses it that the shoulder and the hand, and it's not great. And he was limited to practice on Tuesday. And more than anything, what triggered this was as soon as my person told me that Jimmy G may not play, it's not good, I went and looked at the line. And it was on the move. And I would assume that the big money gamblers were hearing things, and instantly it got bet up at all the important places to 6. And it was at 4.5 earlier. They wouldn't. The places that were dealing 4.5 went to 6 because they knew at 6 everybody's going to take the Niners. Come on. But why did it jump from 4.5 to 6? Uncertainty of Jimmy G grabbing a number early. And if Jimmy G can't go, and it's Trey Lance in Lambeau. He started 2 games. He has not looked good or comfortable in either of them. He's a rookie. We've seen the history of rookie quarterbacks starting in the playoffs. It would be a disaster. And I think the line would surge well through a touchdown. 8.5, maybe 9 is kind of a dead number. Might touch 10. I don't know. Yes, I know the running game, and people have visions of Colin Kaepernick dancing through the Packers 10 years ago. Folks, this is a rookie quarterback. There's a reason that Garoppolo, in the final week of the season, said, hey, we're just going to shoot up Jimmy G's hand. We're going to need him to get to the playoffs. Like, Trey Lance is not getting you to the playoffs. He's just now ready. Down the road, maybe he's okay. I'm not a huge fan now, but maybe the guy's awesome. Right now, what we know is that Trey Lance is not very good. And there's no chance that the Niners could win that game with him starting. So we'll see what happens with Garoppolo. You guys know I'm a fan of Jimmy G. I've been hyping him on this podcast. I think he's much better than he gets credit for, similar to Cliff Kingsbury, who gets a super bum rap. But again, we'll get into that with Mike Jones shortly. So we'll see what happens with Jimmy G. But the line's at 6. And I'll just tell you now, if you start seeing 6.5s, somebody knows something. There are people, when you're betting $100,000, $200,000 on games and moving lines, you have better information than whatever Rappaport has and my guy Glazer and Schefter, all these guys. So those guys have the intel. When you see the line move, that's your big tell. Okay? I do want to quickly talk about the NBA because I didn't know it. I mean, listen, I knew the Lakers were in rough shape, okay? We knew it was not good. But I didn't know it was Frank Vogel's coaching for his job on a nightly basis bad. Let's remember, Anthony Davis gets knocked out of the playoffs last year. Lakers go down without a whimper. He's kind of a big deal. He's probably a top 7 player in the NBA. He's been on the shelf with the MCL. LeBron has been hurt. They've had COVID setbacks out the wazoo. And let's remember, LeBron and AD brought in Russell Westbrook, and he's been an unmitigated disaster. I know he flushed one on Gobert. Whoop-de-damn-do. That's not turning around a season, okay? I'm sorry, guys. the season's not lost, but I don't understand how, oh, we got waxed by Denver by 37. We got to fire Vogel. What's that going to do? And I know, yes, LeBron historically at other stops has gotten guys bounced. I get it. I don't see how getting rid of Vogel now is going to do anything. He is established as a good coach. Again, dating back to Indiana, good coach. He, with the Lakers, winning in the bubble, like good coach. I know you want to say LeBron, fine, but he took Paul George places in the East that nobody thought Frank Vogel could do. I know he was awful in Orlando. Show me somebody who's been good in Orlando. It just seems excessive to be thinking about firing Vogel. I don't get it. And apparently this whole idea of having like Kurt Rambis sit in on Vogel addressing the team, that's kind of amateur hour. That makes the Lakers look bad. Frank Vogel won you guys a title less than, 16, 17 months ago? And now because they're struggling without Anthony Davis and like an entirely new roster, we're panicking and going to fire him? I get it. A lot of people don't like Vogel. But this idea that all of a sudden he should be winning games when he's playing heavy minutes for Austin Reeves and Stanley Johnson, who's on like another 10-day contract. Like, folks, let's be realistic, you know? I mean, every time you're dealt with, you know, a 2-7 offsuit, are you making lemonade out of that? Let's be realistic. So I just think this Frank Vogel stuff's a little over the top, and surely we'll address it if he gets canned. Let me quickly look at the Lakers' schedule because there might be another 30-point loss on the horizon, and I don't know what that's solving. Is the next coach going to come in and be able to tell Russell Westbrook you're sitting out in crunch time? We know, I don't think Vogel can. They got Indiana, then a road trip to Orlando, road trip Orlando, Miami, Brooklyn, Philly, Charlotte, Atlanta. You going to fire him on the road? Man, that's cold. I mean, yes, they lost to Memphis, Sacramento, and Denver. That was a bad stretch. Two of those were on the road. Right before that, they won four in a row against dregs of the leagues, Atlanta, Sacramento, Minnesota, Portland. Bottom line is the Lakers are not great. I don't know what they do with this Russell Westbrook situation. Like, I think you just say, like, hey, it's a close game down the stretch. Sorry, Russ, we're going to leave you out and deal with the fallout later. You win the game, hopefully. And again, I've said it from when they acquired him. Russ is much better with he should just run the second unit and dominate with those guys and eat against backups throughout the league. He's just not a starter at this stage in his career. But, geez, Lakers trying to give us some fireworks. Maybe they're saving it for the week between the Super Bowl and the conference championships. You know, there's like nothing going on. Maybe that's the game plan for the Lakers. Anyways, let's get to today's guest, talk a little Cliff Kingsbury, NFL playoffs, coaching carousel with Mike Jones of USA Today Sports.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guest who grew up in the same area I did, worked at the Washington Post, read the Post growing up. Now he's at USA Today Sports, and he had one of the better tweets from Monday Night Football, basically calling Cliff Kingsbury a fraud. I like that aggressiveness. Let's welcome in Mike Jones. Mike, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm great. I love when people come off the top rope on Kingsbury. And listen, he gets beat up a lot, and he does open himself up to criticism. I'd like to start with your overriding thoughts on Rams-Cardinals from Monday. Kind of a snoozer, but Kingsbury finally made the playoffs, even though he did not make much of a good impression in that first appearance.
Yeah, I mean, they really backed into the playoffs, you know? I mean, you want to go into the postseason with momentum, and the second half of the season, look, if they had not had Colt McCoy for, you know, two of those games to go 2-1, who would have thought Colt McCoy, you know? Because, I mean, they had somebody else who wasn't competent. They don't even make the playoffs. That 7-0 start was great. But, you know, when it was going on, I was asking people, because I do rankings, I think it was like the first two quarters of the season, I was like, okay, here are the teams that really are starting to distinguish themselves. So I ask a lot of people, because look, what do I know? I don't know what I see, but I don't study like these coaches who watch this stuff 24/7, you know, 15-hour days of watching film and everything. So, and I talk to a lot of people and they're like, dude, I don't buy it. You know, he's going to do what he always does, just watch. And I was like, are you sure? Like, maybe he's putting it together. They got a better run game. And people still felt like that they were going to collapse. And sure enough, they did collapse. So once they got last night, I felt like, because of what I was told, like, look, next, when he goes to play these teams a second time around, it's going to be a struggle. And here he is playing the Rams a third time. And the Rams defense was even better, more comfortable, better chemistry. And also on a mission, really. Like, I think that the Cardinals are like, yay, we made it to the playoffs. They kind of looked like they were like, we got here.
Yeah.
You know, the Rams are like, we're trying to get to LA. We're trying to host our own Super Bowl here. And you just saw a different sense of urgency, really aggressive game plan from Raheem Morris. The offense was on point from Sean McVay. Matthew Stafford looked better than he had. And it just looked like two teams, one belonged, one did not.
So for the glass half full on Kingsbury, you'd be like, wow, so he was 5-10-1 first year, then 8-8, then 11-6, mm-hmm. shows progress. Has a rookie quarterback, you know, the typical growing pains. Right. The glass half empty is, well, every season he has cratered down the stretch.
Right.
And that's like kind of the boxer who comes out with a great game plan, and mm-hmm. then he gets hit, and he's like, I don't know how to adjust, and then he just doesn't adjust.
Right.
Are you more of a glass half full or half empty on Kingsbury?
Normally, I'm a glass half full type of guy. I always look for some positives. But again, I like educate myself by talking to people in the league here. And the people that I talked to were like insistent that he was going to do the same thing again. And I was like, but look, he looks like he's really learned something. He's figured out how to run the ball. You know, he added James Conner and, you know, they weren't really a running team, you know, outside of Kyler Murray. And they've added that dimension. And they're like, yeah, but still, watch what happens the second half of the season. And so I'm looking at this and sure enough, it happened again. And then when you go back and look, and another guy told me, like, this is what he does, not just here in the NFL, but even in college, the first half of the season. And somebody tweeted at both of us, they had actually found the math of it. So
yeah, Texas Tech, it was bad.
Texas Tech, you know, so the first seven games of the season for his career, going back to 2013, this dude is 42-20-1. That's impressive. But the second half of the season, from 2013 to 2021, he's 17-43. Mm-hmm. That's awful. And I think that part of it also is like, okay, this dude shows me this offensive whiz. They fired Steve Wilks after one season because they just had to have this genius of a coach who didn't even have a winning record in college. And he's supposed to take this team and take them to new heights and everything and be the guy to develop Kyler Murray. And sure enough, we see, hey, look, he does some good things early in the year. But again, second half of the season, crunch time. Look, the Patriots never looked great in September and October under Bill Belichick. But it's November, December, and January that really matters. And so, yeah, hey, everybody can get off to a fast start, but it's sustainable. And so that's why I feel like, look, this guy's supposed to be so great. Why don't he have a counterpunch? Why hasn't he figured this out yet? And okay, yes, as the record, you look at him each year, it's gotten better. But when it really matters, you know, and he's just not getting it done. So if you're going to fire Steve Wilks, you're going to fire Brian Flores, you're going to fire some of these black coaches on such a short leash, you know, let's look at Cliff Kingsbury with the same type of scrutiny there, because, you know, you're not getting the job done when it really matters either.
So do you think Kingsbury's in trouble here? I mean, coming off a playoff appearance, 11 wins.
I think he'll get another chance.
Okay.
Because, you know, but coming into the season, he was definitely on the hot seat. He better thank God for that 7-0 start, because if they had an up and down start, if they just missed the playoffs, then maybe he would be in trouble. I think he probably has a lot of coaches, you know, he'll be going into year four next year. You don't get 4 years to turn around a team very often anymore. Yeah. You know, it's like 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, if you're not, then they're pulling the plug. So he's really got to do more than just show up for the dance and get the pants blown off of you next year.
I do wonder, you know, and I understand, like, hey, if you pretty much can tell early if a guy has it or he doesn't. But if you start firing coaches after a year, like Wilks, or two, Matt Rhule, supposedly hot seat, or three, you become Cleveland Brownsy, right? And you're just on this cycle of just continuously firing dudes. Like the New York Giants were never on that. And now here in the last decade, they're on it. And, you know, a lot of it's tied to the quarterback. But I do wonder, like, where are you on a guy like Matt Rhule? Like 2 years, total disaster, fires his OC, Flores, people think he got shafted. Like, do you think some of these coaches deserve a time to bake, say, like a Zach Taylor, who was an absolute train wreck? But is Zach Taylor good now, Mike, or does he have a good quarterback in Joe Burrow?
I think that Zach Taylor is aligned with management here, and they figured out how to put these pieces together. They got the right quarterback, because how many times do we see a coach get the wrong quarterback? Matt Rhule's a perfect example, okay? So Cam Newton wasn't it, right? So then you go in, and Teddy Bridgewater's supposed to be the guy, and Teddy Bridgewater wasn't good enough. Then you get Sam Darnold, and Sam Darnold started off okay, turned into a pumpkin, got hurt, Cam, you know, revolving door and everything like that. Guy out in Denver, Vic Fangio, didn't have the right quarterback. Maybe that's not all his fault, but say he had the right quarterback there, this guy would still be there. The defense was very good. The players loved him, but you've got to be aligned with management and you got to make smart personnel decisions. So, okay, Cliff Kingsbury lucked into the number, I mean, a job where he's got the number one pick, you know, and you've got Kyler Murray. But the problem is he's got Kyler Murray. Guys tell me, defensive coaches, again, these guys, like you and me watch these games, maybe we will rewatch some things. These guys live film study. And they will say, you can tell by the play calling, he's basically counting on Kyler Murray to bail him out. He's not changing things to help Kyler Murray. Like when Kyler Murray last year got banged up and he never was quite the same, Cliff Kingsbury was still like, go out there, be Superman. Come on, man. Like, didn't change things up to try to ease pressure on him as he was trying to work his way back. This year, okay, we saw, yes, they lost DeAndre Hopkins. You made that point last night. But there still was not an adjustment to compensate. Okay, you know, as we see Byron Leftwich and Bruce Arians, so they lose Godwin. What do they start, you know, focusing on? Obviously, you got Mike Evans. You start going with more two tight end sets. So that way you say, okay, this is what we have to work with. Let's play with these strengths that we do have. But you don't see those kind of adjustments out of Cliff Kingsbury. And a lot of coaches, they know what they know. And like Sean McVay, you'll see every year he's changing up something with their offense. It's continually evolving. You know, McDaniel up in New England, their offense, you know, they know what they believe in, but they tweak and they change. You've got to be willing to continue to grow. So maybe Cliff Kingsbury needs a veteran, very veteran set of eyes as his offensive coordinator to help him grow as a head coach. I think all coaches should have like 4 years. Unless you're an absolute disaster, because it does take time to build something, you know? But if we're in this climate of the NFL where we're pulling plugs quickly, then he should go. But I think, hey, if it's me, I'm buying a team, I'm hiring a guy, I'm like, look, you got 4 years because you got to get your right quarterback. You got to get the pieces around him. They've got to learn the system. There's got to be some continuity there. And then we'll see where you are.
Yeah. Four sounds reasonable. I mean, the only problem is like the Miami Dolphins, right? They had Dan Marino. Dan Marino leaves 20 years later, Mike. They still don't have a franchise quarterback. It stinks. But to,
dude,
to
our hometown team, Washington, you know?
Washington, I mean, well, they had RG3 for like 5 minutes.
Before, but I'm saying like all the, I mean, it's just like it's a revolving door. If you don't get that quarterback, right?
You got
there's a bunch of bad decisions at quarterback, you know, bad personnel decisions, bad coaching decisions, hires, and you just never get out of that hole.
So I'll give Arizona a little bit of a pass for what I thought was a great offseason, right? They didn't have veteran leadership. Sometimes that can hurt you down the stretch. So they go get A.J. Green, who was largely good, J.J. Watt, leadership, a couple other guys that they picked up who were veterans. Connor, not a huge veteran, but he was on winning teams in Pittsburgh. I thought, and Colt McCoy, the backup quarterback, who was key. Like, I thought they had a good offseason, and that probably helped them get to 11. So how do we set expectations for Kingsbury next year? I mean, he's in a division with the 49ers, who are perennial Super Bowl contenders, right? With Kyle Shanahan, who we could argue is a little overrated, but the Rams, who have Stafford and McVay. And then if Russell Wilson sticks around Pete Carroll, they've been into the Super Bowl. So going into the season, Arizona's behind the eight ball already. They're the worst team in the division, right? And it's like, what are reasonable expectations? I mean, you know, there is an argument that, hey, just getting to the playoffs is an accomplishment. Anything after that is gravy. So it
should kick.
So what's, I mean,
now,
I don't know what they should be then. Like, should
he's got to get a playoff win, you know? You can't just show up to the playoffs to check the box, say, oh, I made it to the playoffs 2 years. I think the real growth will be how they finish the season, you know? So like Washington fans like to be like, oh, we made the playoffs last year. You know, they won the division with a 5-7 record, you know, and they, you know, that doesn't count for me because like you backed into it because the rest of your division was trash.
Okay. So hold on. Does it count for Cleveland last year? They make it with Stefanski. They win a game in Pittsburgh, I believe. Yeah. And then this year they crater back. So listen, I'm with you. I like the fraud and all this stuff, but when you dig deeper, it's like, you could probably make an argument, Mike, to fire like a third of the coaches in this league. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I Mike
we're
Zimmer,
gonna hold this guy up
run.
In such high regard. If you're gonna, he's one of the hot shot. You know, everybody had him on their wish list. All these owners did, okay, as their wish list as a coaching candidate. But I mean, look here. What has he done? Again, how is he doing it too? So maybe they say they got to the playoffs and got the doors beat off of them. That's bad. But the second half of the season here, you know, 3-6 or what was it? 4-6 and lost four of their last five. That's really bad. Like, that's not the way you finish down the stretch of a season. So I think you have to look, you can't just look at the record. You have to look at how it is, how it plays out. I mean, I wouldn't have fired Brian Flores. I mean, look, they missed the playoffs, but they won 8 of their last 9 games. Yes,
but what does it say? Hold
on. About the quarterback.
Yeah. What does it say that Flores started the season 1-7? It's like, was he not prepared? I mean, this is the second straight season. I think he was 1-3 the year prior.
Right. I think the problem there is he had too many cooks in the kitchen. He had a co-offensive coordinator, two guys, you know, a run offensive coordinator and a passing offensive coordinator and everything. But once they streamlined things and all the swirling and rumors about Deshaun Watson, everything went away, Tua really started to take steps forward. Mm. So bad move on Flores, who was on, again, he had one offensive coordinator the first year, a second offensive coordinator the next year, then these two, you know, this tag team, you know, thing.
Yeah. Terrible idea.
So you can't have like all these voices, you know, and then you got a quarterback's coach in the quarterback's ear and you got the head coach, too many voices for a young guy. So in a way that start was Brian Flores's problem. He figured out how to fix it though. And I think that you have to be like, okay, look, we're invested in this guy. Yes, we have our differences. We've got to figure this out here. Pride is the pride's the biggest fault in, you know, 90% of these situations.
Especially
in life, really.
Belichick guys.
You know,
in
the NFL as
so,
well.
So let me ask you about Flores, right? The hiring cycle's happening. I mean, you know, we're recording this Tuesday morning. Who knows if somebody's getting hired later today? But, Mike, I mean, if Flores goes to Houston, Deshaun Watson ain't playing there. He's not going to have a quarterback. Again, some of the, like Dan Quinn, maybe, I think he's using Denver as leverage or trying to, but like, you go to Denver, great roster. You're not winning in that division, right, Mike? Right. Herbert twice, Mahomes twice, the Raiders just made the playoffs. You have no quarterback. Flores goes to Houston. Like, if you have no quarterback, is it even an attractive job? And I say this to set up Eric Bieniemy, who has been with Mahomes and the Chiefs. He somehow doesn't get interviews. And then you look around and you're like, all right, well, if you're Bieniemy, do you even take one of these crappy jobs? Well, you're not. You're going to be done in 2 years. Like, whoever takes the New York Giants job, Mike, they're not going to win. Like, you got – go ahead.
I feel like you as a head coach have to go in there with some guarantees. Like, look, we don't have a quarterback right now. You've got to give me some time to find this guy. And then if he's a young guy, develop this guy if you want me to have a chance. You know, and I said to somebody, like, the David Culley thing really, like, was upsetting, okay? The guy had no quarterback. He had a roster that was really stripped down. They probably would have had trouble beating, you know, Alabama. Then they win 4 games, and they, you know, are really pushing some teams. They fall short, but they were competitive. But the way his contract was structured, it was almost like it was supposed to be a one-and-done thing there.
Yeah.
But, okay, and I asked him, I said, why would his agent even let him sign a deal like that? Well, like, there are 32 of these jobs.
Yeah. Financial security for life, right?
And look, he's got, $17 million for coaching one season. He can go get a position coach job and he'll, you know, he's well-regarded, so whatever. But still, it's still bad because this guy, like, and we're going down another bunny trail, but, like, look at him, look at Hugh Jackson, look at Steve Wilkes. Like, all these, like, coaches, like, are these placeholders in these undesirable situations. And as soon as they get the caps situation fixed and get yourself positioned for some good picks, you fire that guy and then go get a sexy coach instead of letting a coach continue to build what he was working on. You're not going to succeed that way either. Okay.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
How about this one? So I didn't love the Sirianni hire in Philly. Right. And I didn't think whoever was getting that job had a chance to succeed given the Carson Wentz disaster. Sirianni made the playoffs. Like, right. Do we think he's a good coach? Or is that, hey, I played in the NFC East, which
That's
is a joke.
That's exactly what it is.
I mean, and then, you know, you could play that card with Ron Rivera last year. Like, they were not a good team. I mean, it showed this year.
As we saw this year, right.
Right. And they're not going to be good next year. Like, you know, Washington could luckily win 7 games being in that division. But, I mean, and Mike, that's what makes this NFL so fascinating. Like, right now, I think the hottest name, honestly, that I'm excited about is Jim Harbaugh. Do you think he surfaces anywhere? Can he go to the Raiders, say, Derek Carr, stick around, and we can win games? Because if I look at the openings, I mean, I think it's got to be, I know you might not like this, Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence. Lawrence was bad, but I do think he's going to be good. And then Derek Carr, other than that, I don't know that I'd take the jobs.
Yeah, when you look at all these jobs, I mean, Miami, I don't think Tua is bad. I think Tua can continue to grow. But, I mean, the general manager handpicked the head coach, and that didn't work out.
He also handpicked Tua over Herbert.
Right. Yeah. You know, so can you really trust the guy that's hiring you? You know, are you going to be constantly looking over your shoulder there? I think you have stuff to work with. Thank you to Brian Flores for whipping that roster into shape, and you have a young quarterback, you know, but, you know, that one's not so bad. The Houston job, obviously terrible. What are we, Minnesota job? That one's not a bad job. You got to figure out what you're going to do with Kirk Cousins. But like a guy like Marvin Lewis would be perfect there because they're running his system anyway, and he's better than Mike Zimmer. So he could elevate that defense.
Heard in a while. How old was Marvin Lewis?
Marvin Lewis, he's in late 50s. He was
only 63.
Right. He still wants to coach.
So he's been out of the league. He was at Arizona State, looks like, for the last 3 years with Herm Edwards.
Right.
Before that, with
the
Bengals.
He wants to coach. His phone's not ringing. So, why is his phone not ringing?
This is a good question. So the GM was fired in Minnesota as well, right?
Right.
If you are the GM, right, maybe this is your first time getting a GM job. Are you hiring a guy who's been around the block, a veteran, or are you swinging for the fences with a Zach Taylor, anybody who's had a cup of coffee with McVay? What about Brian Daboll in Buffalo, who we could argue he maybe made Josh Allen $40 million a year or whatever. I didn't think Allen was great coming out. But where are you going if you're the Minnesota Vikings? And let's say you get the GM job, Mike.
If I'm the guy, I'm hiring a veteran guy. Because, yes, obviously you have convictions on how you think things should be done. But if I'm a young guy, I want to lean on someone who's been there. When you look at his track record, does he have a good track record of working together with people? Or, you know, some veteran guys are just like, hey, it's my way or the highway, you know, as we've seen coming out of Bill Belichick's tree. But a guy like Marvin Lewis has a good way of getting young guys and old guys to work together. He works well. They had an awful, very bare bones scouting department in Cincinnati, and they were competitive all those years they were there. So he also had some personnel say, but so he does understand, but he also is going to let his general manager. So I'm hitching myself to somebody like that. It's very hard to, you know, go after a young guy, what could be a real roll of the dice because, okay, if you're Sean McVay's offensive coordinator and Sean McVay is his own play caller, you're basically his gopher guy, you know? We're seeing, you know, Matt LaFleur, very meticulous, very organized, whatever. And look, now, he's doing great up in Green Bay.
I think he's criminally overrated. Mike,
Matt LaFleur. Covered him in Washington. Very smart guy. What happens when Aaron Rodgers is gone, though?
If LaFleur's coaching, let's see, who do you want to pick? If LaFleur was coaching Washington this year, what was their record? I mean, are they in the playoffs?
I think he's better than what's his face than Scott Turner as an offensive mind.
I was thinking head coach is LaFleur.
If he's overseeing their offense, I do think that their offense is a little bit better. But still, that team is still bad. You know, Zach Taylor, he was bad. And now Joe Burrow's healthy again. And he makes
I don't think
good.
Jack Taylor's so, good. Is it okay? Right, is that a take to have? Like, you're only good because of Joe Burrow. I'm sorry. I need to see it. I didn't see it the first 2 years. Mike, let me push back on Marvin Lewis. I just called up his history. Won a lot of games in Cincinnati.
Right.
Cincinnati. Playoffs with Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton. 0-7. Never got out of the first round.
Right, right. But
does that...
They didn't have a real scouting department. His assistant coaches and him were the guys who were evaluating talent after the season was over. So you don't have a full-time college scouting department. They subscribed to a scouting service because they were too cheap. If you have a full-time scouting department and a real general manager, how much better could they be?
Interesting.
I feel like there are all kinds of little, you know, pieces to this puzzle that could elevate it and could make it better. So that's why I when I see what he did and talking to people, they're like, dude, if you knew what he had to deal with and to get what he did get out of it, it makes that what he did that much more impressive.
It's funny you say that. And I remember we had Greg McElroy on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he was in Cincinnati, and he said the sauna broke in like week two or whatever, and they were too cheap to fix it. They just never, like, the organization just cheap.
Yeah.
If you try to pull that stuff with Burrow, I don't, right. Hopefully he won't stick around. Yeah, that's about it. All right, let me quickly ask you about this weekend's games. Anything jump out at you, either from a point spread, a side? It seems like the favorites were dominant in wild card round. Do you think the home favorites do again rolled in the divisional round?
I think that two home teams should be pretty worried. I mean, maybe three. The Bucs should be worried about the Rams, you know, because this defense coming after them, and they have playmakers across the board on offense, and the Bucs are a little shorthanded, you know, and those guys, you know, I know that coaching staff, the Rams coaching staff, they were up at 4 o'clock this morning studying film the night after they won, you know, that game. They're coming for these Bucs. I think that the Packers should be worried. Kyle Shanahan taught Matt LaFleur everything he knows. And, you know, this 49ers team, I know that they had to hold on because Jimmy Garoppolo is a generous guy and kept Dallas in that game. But this defense is pretty good. And if Kyle Shanahan knows the tendencies, we saw them go down to the wire. Aaron Rodgers, you know, pulled them out of a tight spot, and they won on that game winning drive. Now you're seeing them again. I think you got to sweat a little bit if you're the Packers. And I think if you're the Chiefs, you're sweating about the Bills, because this Bills team, Josh Allen looks like he's on a mission. I still think that the Chiefs can win that game, but I think it's going to be a dogfight.
Interesting. Your Shanahan take is, you know, I ahead of Shanahan versus Quinn, I was like, you know, Quinn and him, they knew each other in Atlanta. Quinn has to know what's coming, and Dan Quinn just got embarrassed. I thought he got his pants pulled down. I mean, they gave up touchdown, field goal. They could not stop San Francisco. And then now LaFleur, Shanahan's interesting, because I remember the AFC or the NFC Championship, right?
Right.
It was a bloodbath a couple years ago. Have they played since?
They played in the regular season.
That's right.
This past year.
Two-point game.
Yeah, 2-point game. Aaron, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo looked great. March him downfield, they scored, but they scored too fast. And Aaron Rodgers had like 47 seconds to march down the field, score in the game winning, you know.
Was that a Monday game, maybe?
I think it was a Monday night game.
Or Thursday. Oh, that's a good one.
Monday night game, something like that.
Yeah. All right, Mike. Mike Jones, USA Today, formerly Washington Post. Anything else you want to – are you going to keep bombing on Kingsbury? And have you heard from anybody at Arizona, by the way?
No, I have not heard from anybody in Arizona. But again, like, I'm not making this stuff up. I talk to a lot of people around the league, and this is the opinion held by – many coaches and talent evaluators and scouts who scouted his games, put together game plans, and are like, hey, like, once he shows you something next time around, you've got no counterpunch.
Is there anyone that the people you're talking to, is there any young coach that they like? I'm assuming it's not Zach Taylor. Are they talking about Vrabel? Robert Saleh did not show much for my Jets this year.
Right. Yeah, he didn't. I mean, Vrabel has a lot of respect around the league. I mean, look, when you think about what they did, you know, they're not sexy. You know, there's nothing exciting about Ryan Tannehill, but the fact that they still got the one seed after losing Derrick Henry, after having, you know, AJ Brown out, after Julio Jones not getting his first touchdown catch until what, like 2 weeks left in the season.
Yeah.
That defense gradually improved, steadily improved. I don't know what they can do here in the playoffs, but Vrabel definitely has a lot of success, a lot of respect around the league here. It's going to be intriguing. I mean, I think they have a good, you know, favorable matchup here. I don't know. Is Cincinnati, you know, Are they going to be good, or are they going to be like, yay, we won our playoff matchup, and then, you know, they fall
what about off. January Joe Burrow, they're calling him now. I mean, all he did, win national titles in January, wins a playoff game. He's pretty damn good. He's been pretty quick. Yeah.
Very good, very poised, very impressive to watch. So it's going to be intriguing there, too.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for the time, man.
All right, thanks for having me.